listening to Opus Talks, where you'll be in on conversations with insiders in the energy, chemicals, and environmental commodities markets. Guests share insights into the latest trends and innovations, industry challenges, and much more. Let's dive into the conversations that explore where the energy economy is headed, right here on Opus Talks.
Hello, everyone. My name is Humberto Juarez Rocha, and I'll be your host today. We have a very exciting episode coming up. Here at Opus, we've been covering legislation and financial mechanisms aimed at restoring and enhancing nature throughout the world via our Opus Biodiversity Market Report. And I'm very excited for today's episode as we welcome Vicky Patton, the UK lead for Nature Positive Services and global lead for Biodiversity Metric, and Dan Rockefeller, managing scientist and US lead for Biodiversity Metric at Ramble, a global consultancy company, as we learn more about some recent developments that will help us measure and quantify biodiversity around the world. Just to start off, Vicky, Dan, could I ask you to introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your work at Ramble?
Absolutely. Thank you, Humberto, for having us today. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. I work at Ramble. I'm based in the Scottish office of Ramble. But I, for the last 10 years, have been specialising in biodiversity metrics and the use of biodiversity metrics to support the measurement of nature impacts, mainly within the UK for the first 5 years, and for the last 5 years, branching out and taking this process that's really well established in England and taking it to the international sphere and international industries. So it's a pleasure to be able to talk a bit more about that today.
Yes, very excited to be here today, Humberto. My name is Dan Rockefeller, of course, and I'm based out of Ramble's Binghamton, New York office. And I'm a restoration ecologist by training. And over the last 5 years, I've been kind of swallowed up by Vicky's team here. And we've been putting out several metrics over the last several years for the Americas global and now the European biodiversity metric. So very excited to be here to talk about that today.
Thank you, guys. Now, it's a delight to have you. I know we've met a couple of times before. Ramble recently announced the European Biodiversity Framework. And I wanted to ask, Vicky, could you tell us a bit more about what this is exactly and what its purpose is?
Yeah, of course. This is the third metric that we've launched now. The European Biodiversity Metric is a habitats-based metric which allows the measurement of nature change right across Europe, and it's based on habitats-based metric rather than a species-based metric, with the idea of if you create it, they will come. But it's really a metric that can be used for development projects, regardless of industry, whether it's infrastructure or residential development, and also can be used for operational sites to quantify the change in biodiversity value on an operational site, wherever you are right across Europe. So as I mentioned in the introduction there, we've been using these metrics within England and actually within Scotland for a long, long time. It's now a statutory requirement in England, has been for the last 2 years. And we've taken that same methodology that's really tried and tested within England. It's been used for 13 years now, the metric in England. It's gone through a lot of refinement and there's been a lot of case studies in using that metric. We've taken that same methodology with a bit of tweaks, which Dan can go over that, but we've taken that then to the European market, essentially, so that they can benefit from using the same kind of metric that we use and benefit from the shared practice and the change in relationship with nature and how we interact with nature and start to quantify it.
Exciting. And now it's cool to hear about the metric, learn more about it. Could you tell us a bit more about when, is this something that is open source? Can anyone use it? Who would benefit from using this biodiversity framework?
Yeah, it is intended to be open source. Anyone can download it and at any time. It's on the website right now. So please go out there and check it out. I mean, it can be used by, you know, any company really with a land use or development footprint, right? So anywhere from, you know, data centers to mining to oil and gas to, as Vicky said, residential. And it's really intended to help, you know, make decisions about land use, help, you know, avoid impacts and help do a little bit better for nature, right? So ultimately, what we're trying to do here with these metrics is support that natural infrastructure, right, that's intended to support species. As Vicky said a minute ago, if you build it, they will come, but you need the infrastructure to do that. And that's what these metrics are intended to do. So really, you know, anyone with a land use footprint can certainly use these. As Vicky said, it can be used at all stages of across the development process, I suppose, everywhere from site screening We have processes here at Ramble that help prioritize and assess sites that are maybe more or less impactful on biodiversity, using the due diligence phase through to development and design, and then on through operations and maintenance. So pretty applicable across the board.
Interesting. And it sounds something, and I hope to get into this in a bit. I am based in London, so something we hear a lot about for land use developers and anyone developing in England is biodiversity net gain. We can get into that in a bit, but I'm curious on the European biodiversity framework. Is this something that is built upon existing frameworks, or we know about a lot of methodologies, metrics? Is this something that is built upon existing frameworks, or how did you guys innovate this framework to make it your own and make it available so that many and others can use it?
Yeah, I can jump in quick and just say that it is based on the Natural England's methodology. So it's based on that metric. It uses the same underlying calculations with a couple tweaks here to make it a little bit more broadly applicable. In this case, for the European metric, we're using UNIS as the habitat classification system. We've adjusted the idea of distinctiveness, which is used in England, to conservation priority, which is a measure of global habitat rarity. And we use frameworks like IUCN's Red List in North America for the Americas metric. We used NatureServe's global conservation status rankings, you know, a couple of other frameworks that we've used to we've leveraged to build out the habitat condition assessment criteria. So yes, we are using existing frameworks. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel, but we're trying to put these, you know, amazing resources together to make something, you know, really robust and broadly applicable. And Vicky, you probably have some things to add for some of those tweaks, so jump in.
Yeah, I guess to add that we bring to the creation of this European biodiversity metric our learning from, we've created the Americas biodiversity metric and then the global biodiversity metric. And we've worked with our biodiversity specialists right across the globe to create these metrics, to input to these metrics. And as Dan said, we have reached out to different parts of the conservation world to really gather the most applicable evidence for what really needs to be focused on biodiversity when it comes to habitats. But in particular, with this metric itself, we brought all of this wealth of experience and knowledge, and it was commissioned by Amazon, who we're very grateful for, to work with us on this. And we brought on top of that an industry steering group together. So there are many, many experts within the UK who've been using biodiversity metrics for a long time now with the statutory process and feeding into the evolution of the Natural England metric for the biodiversity net gain process. And also metric specialists who are already active in Europe and already using biodiversity metrics in Europe. And it was very important to us to reach out to wider industry, to bring them into the creation process, to make sure that as we created a biodiversity metric for Europe, that it wasn't just our voices in the mix, that it was a combined and collaborative effort across industry to bring thoughts into it, to bring expert ideas into it, and to discuss the tweaks that we wanted to make to the Natural England methodology, which we felt were applicable to Europe, to get feedback on that and ensure that there was consensus behind those decisions. So we really hope that it's something that will be valuable. We would love feedback on it as people start to use it, and we can refine the process as it's been refined in England.
That's really exciting and interesting. When I think of Europe, I think of all the different habitats that are available that are, you know, required a lot of research. So it's really cool to hear about the collaborative effort. And in terms of, you mentioned as well, the Americas Biodiversity Framework, the Global Biodiversity Framework, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that this was published in 2024. And I'm really curious, what have you guys learned being so heavily involved in the development of these frameworks and metrics? What have you learned in the last 2 years since the publication of these two frameworks? What have been some lessons learned, or what has been some of the feedback after announcing those two different frameworks?
I think there's a couple things, and we're still learning, you know, as we use them more and more, particularly in the US, where we've been using the Americas metric, as you said, since 2024. You know, some of the lessons learned are how we classify and quantify the value of forests. Obviously, the forests are kind of the dominant system, and particularly in the eastern United States, and it's a little bit different here versus, I suppose, in England. So how we qualify the value of those, we've run into some interesting scenarios where we maybe are undervaluing forests. So there's some work to be done there. Many clients ask about watercourses, and that's something that we're likely going to look into going forward. And then, you know, one of the things we're working on now is how we scale them. That's always a constant question. It's not always feasible to send an ecologist to the field And so how do we prioritize and help identify key sites where you maybe need to get out in the field and look at those maybe high conservation priority areas and then, you know, kind of triage your sites to use those. I suppose other lessons learned. Jump in, Vicky.
Yeah, I was going to say alongside the lessons learned, I guess what we have learned across industry and about industry is that since we've launched these metrics together, the Americas and the global, we've had more than 2,000 downloads of these metrics. And it just shows that industry is ready for biodiversity metrics, you know, to have that number of downloads. Not all of those people will be using the metrics, of course, you know, but a good proportion of those hopefully will be using the metrics or at least upskilling themselves in what a metric is. And that's what we really want to share is that practice of starting to measure nature. And that's why we've continued on with developing these metrics, because we can see a need for them, that the discussion on metrics is even greater across Europe. We've seen for the last few years a number of players in lots of different countries and a number of areas of industry, from energy to data centers to industrials, starting to use metrics, starting to talk about metrics. And I think that's really the learning. It's the time for us all as an industry and all conservation biologists, ecologists, landscape specialists, engineers, all of us to come together to learn this practice better and to start to work more so that we can properly measure nature efficiently, robustly, transparently, and get the outcomes that we need to really deal with the biodiversity crisis from a development perspective, operational perspective, and extractive areas as well. So it's really nice to see that uptake. It's really encouraging.
Definitely. And Vicky, talking about Europe, we do cover a number of biodiversity credit projects in Europe and other parts of the world as well. And I'm interested because I hear a lot about right now there, in some way, there is policy that requires companies to not only offset or compensate for their damage to the environment, but also to enhance it, as is the case with biodiversity net gain in England. We've seen that policy. It's been almost 2 years into practice. But there's also a lot of voluntary frameworks around Europe and around the world. I wanted to ask, yeah, is the biodiversity credit market something that you guys work closely with? Or there's also, I believe, similar markets in the US. It might be more of a wetlands regulatory market. But yeah, how are you seeing the development of these types of markets or systems that are meant to put nature on the balance sheet? And how do you guys work with that?
Yeah, I mean, we're certainly part of a couple of working groups on biodiversity credits. And it's, again, similar to the metrics, it's a growing conversation. We've seen the European Commission publish their roadmaps to nature credits as well. Again, very encouraging to see that movement and to see the Commission want to create a market driven by biodiversity improvement and biodiversity restoration. It's great seeing that the voluntary efforts, and there are a number of organisations certainly who are committing themselves globally to either practices of biodiversity no net loss or biodiversity net gain. And that will start to drive a little bit of the voluntary market. But what we desperately need is the policy and the legislation to truly drive that market and scale that market. Money from the business community is desperately needed for conservation and for the restoration, you know, to play the part in that huge gap that we have in meeting the need for nature, the financial need for nature. And what we saw, again, to take the learning from England and when that was made a legal requirement 2 years ago, we've seen a huge scale in the nature market because now there's something to drive it because it's a requirement for most of development. So we're hoping that in launching this metric, it provides the measurement and the basis, the tools to then track, change and measure that nature market. Now we need really for the policy and the legislation to come in to drive that market. And we're hopeful that will come in time.
We certainly have a fantastic example right in England for how this metric can underpin a nature-based market. And I'll say too, we're already seeing companies, as you alluded to, we're seeing companies in areas that don't have a regulation around biodiversity. There's companies out there that are willingly looking offsite for those credits, essentially. How are they going to compensate for their impacts on their site on a voluntary basis? And they're already reaching out. So we're working with several companies that are seeking those types of offsetting options. So crediting is happening, whether it's called a credit or not, it's certainly happening already. But as Vicky says, what's really going to drive it, of course, is that regulation as well. So hopefully that comes.
Yes, and talking about how businesses, how developers can use these metrics, the European biodiversity metric, the Americas one. Something that we talk about a lot in this space are the drivers of nature loss, something that we try to write to our audience about and try to assess these types of nature loss. But I'm wondering, from you guys' perspective, how can this metric help businesses or developers understand the drivers of nature loss? What do you see as the main driver of nature loss? And how can your metric be used to help manage that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So there are five main drivers of biodiversity loss: land use change, unsustainable use of natural resources, climate change, pollution, and invasive species. Our metric sits in this land use change and extractives area of biodiversity loss. And between the two of them, the unsustainable use of natural resources and land use change, they account for over 50% of the biodiversity losses that we see worldwide. And so it's important that we start to measure those losses. So companies who do impact land use, who either work in extractives or, you know, they build sites or infrastructure, if you change vegetation at all and you have that land use change, this metric then could help you measure that and put a number to the baseline before you actually make your change. And then after you've made your change and you've developed, you know, whether it's road or rail or residential, or, you know, in the mining sector as well, you can then quantify what your change has been. So companies can start to pick this up, start to quantify their change, be more responsible in terms of their impact within that area of biodiversity loss. And it allows that decision-making process then to take place, because it's very hard to make decisions around your impact to nature if you don't know what they are and you don't know it on a quantitative value. So it's important that we bring this measurement process in, regardless of what metric is used. A biodiversity metric is key to then understanding impacts in these different areas of those drivers of biodiversity loss.
I'll add that you mentioned the balance sheet before, and that's what's beautiful about this metric, is that it's accessible yet robust. And if you can put a number to it, if you can simply put a number to it, which is what this metric is doing, you can then put it on your balance sheet. You can create a KPI, and then you can work toward achieving that. How do you measure 10% net gain or no net loss if you don't have it on the balance sheet? And this is the way to do that, or at least one way to do that. And the great thing about it is that it, as Vicky alludes to, it links that baseline to the impact to the ultimate result, whether it's the creation of your building or the creation of a habitat. It can quantify those changes to help you track over time. So super robust and super accessible. It's easy to understand, and that's what's great about it.
Maybe if I could add into that as well, Umberto, what a few of our clients have asked for us to do as well is, when we work with this metric and we create the biodiversity designs to quantifiably improve nature on their site, what they then want to show is the return on investment by doing that biodiversity design. You know, what are they giving back to society in terms of the health and well-being aspects for having a more biodiverse site, or flood alleviation aspects, or pollination services? Whatever ecosystem services are delivered by that biodiversity design, they can then quantify and then put a financial value to that through natural capital accounting. So it's through then to truly start to put a financial value on the nature design, the biodiversity design. So it's not just nature for nature's sake. We need more biodiversity, but if we can tick these multiple boxes by delivering for biodiversity and deliver for wider society and bringing nature-based solutions, then you're creating these kind of list of wins, a bigger story for a developer to tell, that they're not just delivering in nature, they're delivering in all these other aspects that society needs as well.
Yeah, often our workflow is undertaking a baseline. A company will provide us with their proposed design. We'll tell them what their impact is on biodiversity. And then we will sometimes propose an enhancement option and then show that return on investment that they would achieve by undertaking that enhancement option. And it does often tell a very positive story, which is great.
Thank you. And something I'm really excited about, you mentioned these biodiversity enhancements, and something that I've found really interesting is what that actually looks like in practice. I'm curious, Dan, Vicky, you guys have an example of a case you've worked on or contributed to where you designed or helped design the biodiversity enhancement. What does this look like for a developer, or what's one case that stands out for you?
I'll jump in with one, and because I know Vicky wants to likely talk about another, but we've been working with a data center company here in the US that basically followed the same workflow that I just described. And what was great about it is that they were building on a large portion of the site, but there was a large portion that remained. So through the design process, we were able to provide them with a design library that they then selected several options. And one of those options was to at least attempt to restore regionally and globally significant grassland, tall grass prairie, essentially, to the ecosystem. So that's going to be all sorts of benefits to, you know, not only in terms of just that habitat, but to all sorts of grassland birds and bees and butterflies and other pollinators. So that is great of itself, right? So that there's that site that hopefully will be doing that in the next several years. But now they've got this design library that they can take and then select these options for other regions or other areas in a similar region. And ultimately, the plan would be to develop similar for other regions that they can take on. So basically building and baking biodiversity into the design process is the goal here. And that's what we've been able to achieve. Vicky, you should jump in on this farmer project for sure.
Yeah, that there's a company that we've been working with for many years now. On one of their sites within the UK, we were looking at an operational site and they wanted to quantifiably improve biodiversity value within the site. But again, looking at what does that actually look like within the site and what benefits does that bring? They had a lot of staff on that site. And it was a site that actually had quite a large amount of green space, but not too valuable for nature, but also not too valuable for people in terms of its aesthetics. You know, it was very heavily landscaped. And so the focus was for ourselves as metric experts to work with the ecologists and also landscape specialists to not only create a site which quantifiably was much better in terms of its biodiversity value, but also a site that created walking routes around the site for all of the staff that worked there so that when they have their lunch breaks or they can come out and have meetings within nature. And not only then does it give them a space to go to that's more aesthetically pleasing, but also there's so many studies that show that human health, physical and mental health, is bettered by being in biodiverse nature. And so that's what really brought that to that site over and above just purely delivering for nature. And it's the site now, we've been back to photograph the site and the difference in the site is just quite incredible. So yeah, kudos to everyone and the staff involved in that site because it was a great example of, you know, really good outcome there.
I'll just add to that quickly, a similar project, I believe, with the same company in the US, where we actually were able to engage the employees, right? They participated in the actual delivery of biodiversity benefits, right? So they helped plant a wetland, essentially. Had some fun doing that. Got to throw some socks filled with, you know, burlap sacks filled with some floating emergent wetland plants into wet area and had those established over time. But as Vicky said, a similar transfer to the site, extensive grassland improvements. We worked with a forester to help develop a forest management plan, did some great work to create some clearings to promote regeneration of the understory. And now the employees have a chance to actually interact with and take photographs of. And I believe they even have a competition to, you know, a photo competition. So it's pretty amazing when you get the employees involved. I think it's a lot of fun for them as well.
It's really cool to hear clearly the passion that you guys have for these projects, but also what it actually looks like in practice. I would love to have you guys over at the office so we can see what biodiversity benefits we can bring, even if the office is in a very central part of London. And I'm curious, Vicky and Dan, kind of just as we close out the podcast, it's so exciting to hear the developments, the work that you guys have put in, the cases. What is something that you're looking forward to as we come to 2030? We have COP17 later this year and other conferences, but in terms of your projects and your work, what is something that you'd like to accomplish or really work towards as we head towards 2030?
Yeah, I think key to everything would be that this growing understanding of how easy it can actually be to use biodiversity metrics. That's what I'd love to share, that there are so many of us within Ramble, there are so many of us within other consultancies that use these metrics, and there's so many clients we use them with. And as soon as they start to grasp how to measure nature, it really becomes much easier than they think. And I think that's what I'd love to share, to really start to drive the use of metrics, not just for development and operational sites, but really get it into natural extraction points as well, start to quantify the change there. Sustainable finance is moving as well and needs to be underpinned by metrics. Everywhere I look at the moment in the biodiversity spheres, as we're moving and changing in metrics in biodiversity, it's, you know, we need that measurement. And if we're going to get to 2030 with that aim under the Global Biodiversity Framework to halt biodiversity loss, how do we prove that we're doing it unless we start to measure it? And how do we get to the restoration by 2050 unless we really all get together to undertake this? It's often talked about as a team sport, biodiversity net gain, and it really is. And that's, it really becomes exciting for a lot of people that get involved in the process. So that's what I'd love to bring, is that passion for it, you know, if we can. And pass over to you, Dan.
Yeah, agreed on the passion. And I think ultimately, I think just continuing to build the momentum. I know in the UK or in England, you know, part of the reason that the metric was built and it has become a statutory requirement is because of that private, you know, industry momentum. They're asking for this, a level playing field. We want to measure our impacts. You know, we want to do better. And we're seeing that momentum build slowly in other regions, maybe faster in, you know, in Europe, for example, maybe a little slower in the US, but we're seeing it happen in the US. And so that I want to see that private momentum continue to build so that we'll be forced to do this ultimately. That's for the better of everybody, for wildlife and human communities. So that's what I'm hoping for.
Absolutely. And actually, just ending on that note, what's the next region that you guys are hoping to develop a metric and framework for?
We might pause for a moment, take stock. We've produced three metrics almost back to back, and I know Dan and the rest of the team will be needing a little bit of a break. But, you know, that if there's a need in other regions, you know, we'd be happy to step up and bring our expertise to that.
I think take pause, take stock. I think we've got some tweaks to be made to the Americas and global from the learnings we've had from the European metric. And I think those will be the next to be issued going forward. But yeah, we're excited to continue to expand as the needs arise. And hopefully that happens.
Amazing. Vicky, Dan, I'm really delighted to have had you on the podcast today. Thank you for talking to us about the metric. Congratulations again on the launch of the European Biodiversity Framework. I know a lot of work goes into this, and it's exciting to see the pragmatic cases, but also what we hope that people use this metric for now and going forward. So I want to thank you again for being on this podcast, and I hope to see you guys very soon.
Thanks much, Alberto. For having us.
Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
We hope you've enjoyed today's insider conversation on Opus Talks. Join us next time for a deep dive into another industry insider's world. You can find more Opus Talks episodes at opusnet.com/podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.